I'd like to thank Hayden for doing the reading. It's no wonder I can blow in the mic. Is that all those hard words that I don't know how to pronounce, so I just thought I'd let him take care of that. Appreciate you covering for me there, Hayden. It's a pleasure to be with all of you this morning. Look forward to the opportunity to share and to study. I'm going to try to do something a little different today. I was not able to be with you on Mother's Day. I was in Alabama teaching. And today's Father's Day. Happy Father's Day, fathers. But I'd like to kind of blend together the picture of a mother and then the picture of a father from 1 Samuel in chapter 1. And hopefully it'll be helpful for those of us who are parents. We're either children or parents. I think all of us in the audience fit one of those two categories, and I hope that this will be helpful to you. We have some grandparents visiting with us. Grandparents of former Purdue students who've now been left in the custody. I mean, they're caring for their grandchildren while mom and dad are away. Others of you are visiting with us from other places, and we're delighted that you've come. Hope that you'll be encouraged by observing our study together. Some of you may be here visiting in regard to potentially attending a university in the area. We're anticipating some visitors from California next week in that regard. So I always want to express our thankfulness to you and would appreciate if you would fill out a visitor's card and leave that with us or put it on the back table or hand it to me as you exit. We like to say thank you and appreciate the fact that you've come. Maybe the kids have deserted you, Monty, you know, with all those children to take care of. There are plenty of things to care for. So thank you, moms and dads, for sharing with us and bringing your children to share with us as well. I want to read with you from 1 Samuel, and I will pick the easier part, if you don't mind, as we continue reading from 1 Samuel in the days of the judges. And think about what's going on as these mothers and fathers are trying to rear their children in a rather difficult environment. We're told in verse 11 as we reread, she made a vow, that's Hannah, and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and a razor shall never come on his head. Now it came about as she continued praying before the Lord that Eli was watching her mouth. As for Hannah, she was speaking in her heart, only her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard, so Eli thought she was drunk. Then Eli said to her, how long will you make yourself drunk? Put away your wine from you. But Hannah replied, no, my lord. I'm a woman oppressed in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I've poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant as a worthless or wicked woman. For I have spoken until now out of my great concern and provocation. Then Eli answered and said, go in peace. May the God of Israel grant your petition that you've asked of him. She said, let your maidservant find favor in your sight. So the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. Then they arose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord and returned to their house in Ramah. And Elkanah had relations with Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. It came about in due time that Hannah had conceived and that she gave birth to a son and named him Samuel, saying, because I've asked him of the Lord. Then the man Elkanah went up with all his household to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and pay his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, I will not go up until the child is weaned. Then I will bring him, that he may appear before the Lord and stay there forever. Elkanah, her husband, said to her, do what seems best to you. Remain until you've weaned him. Only may the Lord confirm or remember his word. So the woman remained and nursed her son until she weaned him. Now when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, with a three-year-old bull and one ephah of flour and a jug of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh, although the child was young. Then they slaughtered the bull and brought the boy to Eli. She said, Oh, my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. For this boy I prayed, and the Lord has given me my petition, which I ask of him. So I've also dedicated him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he is dedicated to the Lord. And he worshiped the Lord there. But just to get a little bit of background of what's going on in this context, for us to remember some of the situation, we're going to find that Israel is experiencing a debilitating lack of a moral compass. And spiritual leadership is waning considerably. The priesthood is defiled. You remember the sons of Eli and what they've been doing around the tabernacle. And Eli himself lacks spiritual qualities. He refuses to restrain and to rebuke his sons in their ungodly immorality. And there's just a series of inconsistent judges. And the description given twice at the end of the book of Judges, in which this time period is set, is every man did what was right in his own eyes. Now, is that the kind of time period in which you, mom and dad, want to rear your children? But is that not pretty much a description of what we would find in our culture today? That here you are, and you're bringing children into this kind of a world with this kind of religious and political debauchery? And yet that's exactly the time in which Samuel was born. And so we have the time with Elkanah and his wives. I'm going to pronounce her Penina. That's the way I grew up pronouncing her. You pronounce her however way you want, and I'm sure she'll straighten us out whenever we talk to her. But notice her, and did you hear as Hayden was reading, the rival? I mean, this woman who's had these children, she's just on Hannah all the time, just rubbing it in, and especially at times when they would be going and thanking God for their children. And for those of you who are not able to have children, I mean, you especially feel this. Women who have wanted to have children, they don't have children. Some of you, we learned this morning in class, some of you waited for 10 years to have children and weren't able to have children. And some are never able to have children. And others just always, sometimes, maybe unintentionally, rubbing it in your face. And here in a time when every man did what was right in his own eyes, here's two women in the rivalry that is just oppressive for Hannah. But now it's time, and they've come up to the place where they were worshiping. Shiloh was where God's people met at that time. That's where the tabernacle was. I know your translation will say temple. Actually, it was the time period in which the tabernacle was still in existence. And Eli is a priest of God, and his sons are supposed to be priests of God. But they're not good people. They're not good priests, at least those boys were not. And so we find a time when Hannah comes to honor God and to make sacrifices along with Elkanah. And she is bitter of soul, and she makes a vow. And she says, "Oh Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant, but give her a son." You know, she could have just stopped right there. Wouldn't it have been reasonable? Wouldn't it have been understandable just to say, "Can't you give me a son? Won't you give me a son?" She could have just had that as the finality of the prayer. Perhaps you ladies have prayed that very thing. Perhaps you husbands have prayed that very thing. That won't you just give us a son? It would have been quite reasonable for her to stop there. But she didn't. The one thing she's been begging God for is a son. More than anything else, more than anything in the world, it seems that she wanted a son. And maybe the ridicule of Penina would no longer be so oppressive. "Oh God, give me a son. Give me a son." Could you have prayed that? Perhaps some of you have, and perhaps some of you are praying that right now. "Please give me a child. I don't care whether it's a boy or a girl, just please give me a child." But you notice what she says. She says, "God, if you'll give me the one thing I want more than anything else, I'll turn right around and give him right back to you." And that might be a little harder prayer. How could she do that? The way she could do that was because she was God-centered and not self-centered. The way she could focus on, "I want to give him back to you," because she recognizes he's the one who's given him to me. And so she wants to give the child back because her relationship with the living God said, Lord, I will trust you. I will surrender myself to you. I believe in you. I believe in your provision and your compassion and your care. God, give him to me, and I'll demonstrate my love to you because I'll give him back to you. And so as we think about this, we think about Hannah's promises. I'll give him to the Lord all the days of his life. And not only that, a razor will never come upon his head. I'll never cut his hair. Now, we may have lots of questions about why not cut his hair? Well, we can learn something about that in Numbers chapter 6, verses 5 and 6, when we read about this Nazirite vow. This is a demonstration of a consecration to God, a designation of holiness separated to the Lord. And I think that's the implication that she's giving. I am going to fully devote him to you and to your care. And you know, she doesn't just get it from Peninnah. Now as she's pouring out her heart, she gets the criticism from Eli. Here she is at the tabernacle. Here she is appealing to God in the very house of God that he might hear her prayer. And Eli then accuses her of being drunk, as if the ridicule she'd already been experiencing was not enough. Hannah's crying out to God in absolute silence, yet her lips are moving. Haven't you done that? Haven't you in a prayer, there's nothing coming out, but your lips are moving because you're praying to God. And here's the good old priest, and he would have been an old priest by this time. And he comes up and says, look, lady, you're worthless, you're wicked, you're drunk. And she says, I'm not drunk, I'm not a wicked, I'm not a worthless woman. What I'm pouring out is not wine, what I'm pouring out is a broken heart. I'm pouring out to God my provocations. I'm pouring out to God my pleas. That's what's been pouring out. It's not been wine. It's not been strong drink. Hopefully next Sunday night we'll look at the distinction between those two and look at the damage of wine and strong drink. But that's not her. And yet he accuses her. How long will you keep on drinking? How long are you going to keep this up? She says, no. That's not me. Did you ever judge somebody wrongly like that? You ever seen somebody think, well, what's wrong with this person? And we may make some terrible assumption and terrible accusation, and hopefully we've had the opportunity to be rebuked and say, no, that's not right. That's not, you've misjudged me. Do you notice that we don't ever read about him apologizing, do we? I don't know if he did or not. But he never says, you know what, lady, I'm sorry. I was wrong. Please forgive me. You don't find those words. I don't know if he said them or not, but they are noticeably absent from the text. But do you notice her response? Instead of saying, look, mister, you don't know what you're talking about. And you know, she could have reamed him out, couldn't she? But do you hear her humbleness? She says, no, that's not me. I'm pouring out my heart to God. I'm praying here out of my great anguish and my grief. But you see this lesson here, ladies. Here's a lesson for women of God. Even when somebody maligns you, even when somebody mistreats you, even when somebody persecutes you, especially when it's supposed to be somebody who's religious or some kind of religious leader, the gentle spirit, the way in which she responded to this false accusation, and look at the gracious way in which she responds. And so as we think about that, we've got the promise of God, it seems, via Eli. Eli says, go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant you what you've asked of him. It was believed in that day, and for good reason, that if the priest spoke, that the blessing of God would come upon you. Maybe Eli is actually speaking as a prophet. If so, it sure seems that she takes it that way. Here's the woman who can't eat. Here's the woman who can't sleep. Here's the woman who's all distressed. And you notice the very next thing, it says she ate and she went home and she was happy. Just a sudden change in her demeanor. Now she could eat. Now she could hope. Now she could anticipate. Maybe God really will give me a boy. Maybe I really will receive this blessing from God. And so she said, "May your servant find favor in your eyes." And then she went home and ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. So when you read the biography of Hannah, you kind of walk through the experience with her, trying to see it from her vantage point. She doesn't know how the story's going to end, but she's going to trust God. And there were things as I was listening to a lady named Janet Parshall. You'll see her quoted here in a minute. As I was listening to Janet Parshall a few weeks ago on the radio telling about Hannah, I thought, there's no way I can relate to this. This is a woman talking to women, and that's exactly what was happening. I thought, I'm not a woman, I don't feel like a woman, and there's no way I could say this, so I'm going to try. And if you want her transcript, it'd be a lot better. But I'm going to try to share you as best I can from a human and from a man's perspective what this woman says how women feel about having babies. And so guys, don't disconnect here because we really need to get this part. And so what happens? Well, what happens is Hannah's son is God's son. And so in the fullness of time, she conceives and gives birth to a son. And she named him Samuel, because I've asked the Lord for him. You know, I had never thought about it before. I just suppose they go home and 9 months later, there's a baby. But that's not said in the text. Sometime later, she had a baby. I don't know if it's a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. I don't know how long. But in the fullness of time, we'd say in God's time, she had a baby. That's not true for every woman. Not everyone is going to get to have a baby. But in the fullness of time, she gets pregnant. And here's this 9 months. And what she's saying evidently to herself is, "Lord, you gave me a son. I'm going to give him back to you all the days of his life." That's one thing to say when you don't have a baby. But now she's got a baby. And that baby is turning under her heart. She feels that heel, and boy, is he a kicker. She feels the hiccups. She feels everything that's going on inside of him. And this is her baby. And it must have been every day that she had to remind herself, no, this is God's baby. This is not simply my baby. This is God's baby. And so over and over, day after day, time after time, for the next several years, at least three, she has to relinquish, "This is your son, God. This is your son. This is not my son. It's your son." Over and over, she would have to brace herself for this. And so she didn't relinquish once. Over and over, reminding us of the profound reality that our children do not now, nor have they ever, belong to us. They are His. Janet said, "We are simply in a lend-lease program. He gives us permission to touch their heart and their minds, to teach them, to write truths on the tablets of their heart, to help them to know and love the Savior, to get them to love His Word. But in the end, they're His." Now, moms with these little babies, please hear that. They're His. And when you think, no one could ever love my child as much as I love my child, may we be reminded that God loves our children far more than we ever can and will. He loves our children completely and perfectly. And so as we think of those things, what's Hannah going to do? What's she going to do? So now, when the man Elkanah went up with his family to offer the annual sacrifice to the Lord and to fulfill his vow, Hannah didn't go. Please be advised that it was the males who were required to attend those feasts. She said to her husband, "After the boy is weaned, I will take him and present him before the Lord, and he will live there always." She hasn't forgotten. And just allow me, please, to share a little bit of the custom of the day. When they weaned back in those days, it wasn't at 6 months, it wasn't at 3 months, it wasn't at 9 months, it wasn't at a year. Culture tells us that they would breastfeed their babies for generally 3 to 5 years. We're going to do the short form. 3 years that mothers would breastfeed their children. And so as she's nurturing him, and as she's teaching him, as she's weaning him, she taught him how to do his jobs. Taught him how to say his prayers. To make his little cot. She was raising him in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And every single day for Hannah, Hannah knew that one of these days, and every day, was drawing closer to the day that she was going to release him. Maybe at age 3, maybe 4, maybe 5. How'd she do that? I'd suggest to you she did it because she was a true woman, a woman of God. She did it because her life was God-centered, not self-centered. She had a millions of reasons, even by today's standards, to say, no, this is mine. But she said, Lord, I don't know what the future holds, but I do know that you hold the future. You gave me this child, and Father, I'm going to keep my vow. I'm going to give him back to you, and he will be yours all the days of life. So she surrendered. She surrendered and said, yes. Yes, Lord. That's how she did it. How else could you possibly do that? And in doing so, she becomes the magnificent role model for what it means to be a true woman. But I want you to notice this. Would you see that her husband is a part of all this? She doesn't just do this. She has to have the approval of her husband at this point. And he says, do what seems best to you. Stay here until you've weaned him. And only may the Lord make good his word or confirm his word. So the woman stayed home and nursed her son until she'd weaned him. This vow had the affirmation of the husband. Elkanah's not just, oh, well, whatever you want to do. He is fully supportive of this commitment that she has made to this child. Fathers, please, when you have a wife who is such a lovely and magnificent woman to commit herself to give her children to the Lord, please, please support her in that. Please affirm her in that. Please encourage her in that, and please participate in that. Don't ridicule her. And don't bemean her because she wants to be home, providing, servicing, rearing your children. You know, this boy, Samuel, this is not just Hannah's boy. This is Elkanah's boy too. He's got to give up this boy also. This boy might have been really good in the field. He might have been a great craftsman. He might have really brought a lot of money in for the family. Elkanah's making a sacrifice too. She had the support of her husband. But moms, if he's only 3, how do you look at your 3-year-old? I have a 4-year-old grandson. We tend to think, well, they're just babies. They're just infants. Look at the intimacy of nursing. Think about how mom is remembering him. She's going to keep her word. But he's got a fever. His first teeth are coming in. And she knew that when she weaned him, he'd be gone. Look with me, if you would, in Isaiah chapter 49 and verse 15. In Isaiah 49 and verse 15, God, who developed this whole idea of nursing, says to mothers, can a mother forget the baby at her breast, and have no compassion in the child she's born? Though she may forget, I will never forget you. Moms, as I've already fully admitted, I don't know about this. But you do. You know about nursing your baby. You know about smelling their sweet baby hair. You know about them taking their finger and curling your hair as they feed, as they receive their nourishment from you. Moms, I doubt that you could ever forget that. But God says, even if you do forget that, I will never forget you. Even if mothers forget that most intimate, that most precious experience, God says, I will never forget you. The vast, deep, and wide love of the Father, I will never forget you. Janet said, as intimate, as maternal, as universal as that experience is of a mother nursing her child, that will fade. But I will never forget you. God knows us far better than a mother knows her child. And so as we think about Hannah remembering, she's going to follow through. And in case I would forget it, I wonder, moms and dads, if we are not just as earnest as Hannah is when our first child is born. That we are so determined, I am going to do everything possible to give this child to you. I wonder if we're just as earnest and just as devoted to that third and fourth child as we were the first child. Do we kind of ease up, maybe? Or are we just as committed to give our fourth child to the Lord as we are to give our first child to the Lord? She's going to have more children. But after this one is weaned, she took the boy with her, young as he was, along with a three-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord at Shiloh. They slaughtered the bull, brought the boy to Eli, and she said, basically, remember me? I'm that woman you thought was drunk. As surely as you live, my Lord, I'm the woman who stood beside you praying to the Lord. I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I've asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life, he'll be given over to the Lord. And he worshiped there. He worshiped there. So here's Samuel. Here's Samuel ministering before the Lord. I think every major translation used that phrase in verse 18 of chapter 2. Here's Samuel, this little boy, ministering before the Lord, wearing a linen ephod, and that would be a little sleeveless jacket. Here he is trained to serve. He's given a little robe each year by his mother. It could have just said a robe, but it's a little robe to remind us this is a little child. But this is a little boy, 3 to 5 years old, and he has been trained to serve. He has not been trained to be served. He's been trained to serve. That's what ministering is. It's serving. This little boy was taught as a little child to serve old people. Eli's an old man. And parents, please teach your little children to serve old people, not run over them. Serve them. And so here's his mother. And she'd make him a little robe and bring it to him year after year when she'd come up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifices. And once a year, she'd get to see him and bring him a new coat once a year. And she'd take it to him and go up to offer the annual sacrifice. And I wonder what she thought. Would it be, oh, Samuel, how big you've gotten. Oh, Samuel, do you remember me? Oh, Samuel, you belong to God. When they turned to go back to Ramah, in the quiet of that journey on the way home, do you think she said to herself, one more year, another whole year before I get to see him again? Or did she maybe think, oh God, you're so gracious, you're so kind, you gave me what I prayed for, Father. What a joy it was to be able to turn right around and give him back to you. Don't know what her prayer was. But we do read that Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife, and would say, may the Lord give you children from this woman in place of the one she dedicated to the Lord. And then they'd go back home. And the Lord blessed Hannah, and she conceived and gave birth to 3 sons and 2 daughters. And the boy Samuel grew before the Lord. Precious memories. Precious story. Can we do a little bit of takeaway? How do we give our children to God? I suggest that we start with praying for our children. Praying for our children before they were born. Last weekend was a very touching time when our 24-year-old nephew was married, and his great big old giant father had said the night before, "For the last 24 years, I've been praying for this boy, and I've been praying that someone might rear a young woman that would love God and would love him, and that he would love and protect her." Praying for our children before they're ever born. Hannah did that. We can read the Magnificat, Luke chapter 1, when Mary's received the news that she's going to give birth to the Savior of the world. And she says, "Oh God, let your will be done." Hannah prays for a boy, and that boy is the one who's going to change the nation. Samuel and Moses were the two greatest of God's people as the Jews viewed them. And Samuel's a great man. He's the king giver. He's a great prophet. He's a great priest. But then Mary has the son who would be born who would change the world. Moms, when you're praying for your children, are you praying for somebody to change the world? To change at least the little world in which we live? That your son, your daughter will be a man or woman of faith that will lead others to know and serve God. The prayers of a righteous mother accomplishes much. Ms. Parshall goes on to say there's something we can learn as praying women. That's this. Whether we have biological children or not, we are all spiritual mamas to somebody. And we can be praying. Single women, childless women, women with a quiver full of children, women who've never had any children. God has put us in the position of being true women for children. This last week, I had left boxes from my dad and mom's estate just sitting in the laundry room. Cindy finally decided it's time. She gets boxes out and sets them on the dining room table. And there's just all these letters, these love letters from my grandpa and my grandma. And I'm just saying, chunk them. They're their memories, not mine. And in one of those letters, 1937, 3-cent stamp. You didn't even have to put, there was no zip code, no address, just Glover's Gap, wherever that is in West Virginia. And inside that, and I've got it in my briefcase if you want to see it, Grandma, inside that envelope, for some reason, was a little 2-page last will and testament of William Wilma B. Now Yeader. And here's what she said. You can see it. Here was her will. Cindy and I just recently redid our will. I really wish we'd included something like this in our will. "To you all," she'd written to her husband and both of her children, "to you all I leave my faith in God and my prayer that you will always remain faithful to Him all the days of your life." Now that's a will. That's a will. And so as we think about that, and we think about in that same dilapidated, degraded time, the man Manoah, as a father, says, as he prays to the Lord, "Oh Lord, I beg you, let the man of God you sent to us come again to teach us how to bring up the boy who is to be born. God, teach us how to be dads, how to be fathers, to teach the boy who's to be born." And may I suggest to you that we teach our children by practicing obedience. The generations before Samuel were reminded that their dads had failed desperately and they were dead in the wilderness. They needed to dare to discipline. Even the second and the third and the fourth child. To go near and listen to all that the Lord our God says, then tell us whatever the Lord our God tells us. We will listen and obey. Moses is reminding this generation of what their daddy said. "The Lord heard you when you spoke to me, and the Lord said to me, I have heard what this people said to you. Everything they said was good. Oh, that their hearts would be inclined to fear me and keep all my commands always, so that it might go well with them and their children forever. But it's not surprising that in Samuel's day, with the big, tall, strapping young king who started out humbly but became very arrogant very quickly, and Samuel's having to speak to Saul. Excuse me. He says, "Does the Lord delight in burnt offering and sacrifices as much as in obeying the voice of the Lord? To obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed is better than the fat of rams. For rebellion is like the sin of divination, and arrogance like the evil of idolatry." Samuel knew and saw the rebellion and the arrogance in Saul that would lead to his own destruction and many in Israel. I have been so impressed with some of you young parents. I wish I had thought and known and acted like you're acting. I see young parents who say, "You will obey." I see you wearing out those little ones so that you are training them so that they learn to obey. And that is such a wonderful and such a good thing. Do not quit. Do not stop. Keep teaching them to obey you, that they may obey the Lord. It's a beautiful word. Finally, may I share just one more thing? Would you please prepare your children for service? I ask you, do you train with a mirror or with a window? It's an illustration by a woman. I think it's a very good one. The person who trains with a mirror trains the child to say, "Look at me. I am the king. I am the queen. Everybody serves me." And all that child sees is themselves. Is that the way you've trained your children? That was the 1980s. That was the 1990s. The 80s was the generation. That was the decade of the child. It was all about everybody's supposed to serve the child. Look at me. I am queen. I am king. Everything revolves around me. Everybody is responsible for my happiness. But there's another approach. There's the approach that instead of "look at me," which is what our internet interviews tell us all the time, regardless of the age, there is the parent that trains their child to look at the window. If you walk across the street, I'm not advertising any particular restaurant, usually the door is clean enough that you can see your reflection when you walk in. But you know what? You can see through that window, and you can see other people. We do need to see a reflection of ourselves, but we need to see beyond ourselves. We need to see that there's a big world out there, and that world needs to be served. And it is not about me. And we need to quit looking in the mirror so much and start looking through the window and look at who all we can serve. This produces children who are trained to serve from a very early age. They're to serve their parents, to serve their siblings, to serve their friends. And yes, even the enemy kids who won't share. They're given responsibilities because they are a part of the family. They have what we used to call chores. And a 3-year-old can do his chores. And they're able at a very young age to serve by caring for themselves and their family through various tasks. Hannah prayed and taught Samuel to obey and serve God and others. May we parents teach and practice loving God and keeping His commandments. In Luke chapter 6, Jesus says, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I say?" In that context, He says, "I will show you what He's like who comes to me and hears my word and puts them into practice. He's like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on rock. And when a flood came, the torrent struck the house, but could not shake it because it was well built." When we hear God's words, when we hear what He tells us to do, to obey Him, when He hears that we must believe that His Son is the Christ, that He was raised from the dead, that we must repent, that we must confess Jesus, that we must be buried with Christ in baptism, we either will choose to submit and obey, or we will say, "I will not do it." We're all children of God. We all have the choice of whether or not to obey. Won't you obey Him as we stand and sing?